He could not believe it happened with the breaking down of the molecules or any other way. He was laughing when he said that, and I laughed along with him, saying, "Hey, you're the one who said it, not me." He said he could believe it if he heard someone else say it, but not himself. He really made a joke of it, but I suspected he knew enough about hypnosis to realize it had to be true, or he would not have said it. He was just trying to justify it to himself, the same as all the others who have these experiences. They will try to find alternate explanations for their conscious mind to accept. So it apparently doesn't matter even if you are an investigator and are familiar with the techniques and hypnosis itself, the reaction is the same. John worked with dying hospital patients and tried to prepare them for the world they were about to enter. He did much good before it came time for him to make that journey himself. And then, as his subconscious said it would, his heart simply stopped. I learned much from John about investigative procedures. I will always miss his advice, but I am grateful I was honored to know him for that brief time. John's experience showed the difficulty of differentiating between encounters with aliens and astral traveling. I began to pay attention to my subject's unusual dreams, while working with Phil on my book Keepers of the Garden. He had no conscious memories of alien encounters, only traumatic dreams. When we explored these, we found actual encounter experiences going back to his childhood. Some of the details uncovered established a pattern I would see repeated over and over again. 98. Hidden information in dreams. The fact that I got together with Carrie at all is too far-fetched to ever be considered coincidence. My friend, Connie, had mentioned her longtime artist friend who lived in Houston. Carrie had had strange dreams and, supposedly, visions that suggested contact with aliens. Connie thought I might like to work with her, but it seemed highly unlikely as Carrie lived so far away. She was kept on a short leash, as her husband did not allow her to travel away from home. She had not visited Connie since she moved to Arkansas, even though Connie was an old and dear friend. Then the strange coincidence stepped in to bring us together. Connie went to Houston to visit Carrie, and became deathly ill. The only way she could return home to Arkansas was for Carrie to drive her. Under the circumstances, her husband gave his permission, and she made the journey. Connie called me on a Tuesday night after arriving back home. She wanted me to come to her house to meet Carrie so she could discuss her experiences, and perhaps have a regression. She knew she would never be in our area again, so this would be her only chance to meet with me. I was due to leave Thursday morning for a convention in Little Rock, so Wednesday was the only available day. We met on that day for supper, and then I asked her to tell me about her experiences for the tape recorder. She had memories of dreams associated with aliens, but she mostly wanted to find out about an out-of-the-body experience and a vision she was shown. It had made a great impact upon her life, although other people made light of it. I told her I would work on anything she wanted to. I believed it was more important to help her than to find another interesting piece of information dealing with UFOs. The out-of-body experience occurred in 1978 as she was preparing to go to bed. She knew she was not asleep yet. She had put on her nightgown, and was sitting on the side of the bed, when she heard a deep voice from up in the corner of the room, saying, "Carrie, come with me." And he didn't say it out loud. It hit right here, she pointed to her forehead. And I felt myself like a wet towel. You, the custodians, 99, know how when you put a towel in water and lift it up it all sticks together and it's heavy? Then I felt myself just float up and out of my body. And all of a sudden I was floating with this grayish, misty, no form, nothingness sort of thing. When I came out of myself, I saw that. It was this misty thing with no form, and it had black eyes. Deep, loving eyes. And all of a sudden we weren't in the room anymore. We were floating up above everything. From this perspective Carrie was shown 5 scenes in succession. They seemed to apply to future events in her life, and she was shown them in time sequence. To me they seemed full of symbolism, similar to the type our subconscious uses in dreams. Over the years since this experience, some of the events had already come to pass in Carrie's life, except the one that had left the greatest impression, and it caused the greatest fear and confusion. She had never been able to forget it. She saw a body of water. She couldn't determine whether it was a lake or an ocean, but there were hills and trees that came down to the water's edge. She was floating above it, looking down on it. The water had a greenish color, and was in tremendous turmoil, as though from a storm. All the sky was greenish, and there were huge waves. Then she saw thousands of dead fish floating belly up in the water. Two white birds were flying over the water when they suddenly fell from the sky. She was then shown a partially demolished city. There were hundreds and hundreds of people in different stages of illness. And she saw herself among them, feeding them and trying to care for them. The words came into her head, "And some can eat, and to some it will turn to vinegar in their mouth." To me, this sounded biblical. During this sequence she knew she wasn't sick, and she knew she couldn't get sick. As she protested, "Why me?" the answer came. "This was not shown to you for you to fear. Do not be afraid. This was why you were sent to earth. You must be prepared for these coming times." It then repeated, "Do not be afraid," 3 or 4 times. 100. Hidden information in dreams, Carrie continued. "Then all of a sudden I found myself back in my room sitting on the bed. I looked to see if my husband was awake, and he was lying there snoring. And I was shaking as I looked around the room. Nothing had changed. I got up and walked out to the den, smoked part of a cigarette, and put it out. I was sweating. I was scared to death. I was not scared of what I saw, I was scared because I knew I wasn't asleep. I didn't know what had happened, but I finally crawled into bed and went to sleep. The next morning I called 4 or 5 ministers. I started out with that, thinking something had come to me to tell me about the future. Well, I found out very quickly they were not whom I should have called. Their first suggestion was that something was mentally wrong with me. So I learned there are some things you cannot discuss with others. I knew it was not a dream. I stayed frightened for 2 or 3 years, because I knew these things were going to happen. It was not something I believed would happen, but I knew was going to happen. It didn't help when some of the first events began to occur." She indicated this experience was the main one she wanted to explore under hypnosis. She was positive the other, alien suggestive, experiences were just dreams, although they were disturbingly vivid. I encouraged her to tell me about them anyway, just for the record. She described a dream, or nightmare, that was so vivid she had never forgotten it. It occurred in early September 1963 when she was a 19-year-old student at a university in Texas. In the dream she found herself in a curved room between rows of incubators. She called them incubators because they had babies in them, but they were not like any babies she had ever seen before. She had drawn pictures of them and said she would send these to me. The babies had huge heads, and huge eyes, which was in sharp contrast to their tiny, shriveled bodies. They were completely submersed in fluid, and she knew they were growing in it. The babies were communicating with one another through their minds, and they had a huge vocabulary of sophisticated words. The babies in the different incubators, the custodians, 101, seemed to be at the same stage of development. Their skin was luminescent, pearlized, whitish, and appeared almost transparent. A woman then came into the room, and dropped a capsule on the floor. It resembled a time-release capsule, except that it was clear. This was put into the fluid to grow the babies. I thought she meant that the capsule contained something that was added to the fluid to help the baby develop, but she emphasized that the capsule was the baby. That was like the seed that grew the baby. They put the capsule in the fluid, and then the baby grew out of that capsule and continued to grow. But she dropped this one on the floor. So I leaned over and picked up the capsule and put it in my pocket. I wanted to tell someone about it, and show it to them, because I knew that was how they did it. Then there were other people in the room saying I shouldn't have the capsule. I was scared, because they were mad at me. At that point I woke up. Carrie continued, "Anyway, that was my dream, and I've never forgotten it. I had snatches of the same dream the entire time I was attending college. I had the feeling I was working in this nursery at night, instead of sleeping. No wonder I was tired when I woke up." I don't know whether this is UFO related. I'm an artist. I'm a creative person. It could be that, or it could simply be dreams. If we have the session, I may not remember anything more than I've told you about any of this. Connie sat in on the session with her friend. Carrie gave me the approximate dates she wanted to zero in on, and we agreed to try to cover all the incidents, if possible. I knew from past experiences that if the incidents had merely been dreams, the subconscious would tell us so. We would not know until she was regressed to the dates. Carrie proved to be an excellent subject, going quickly into a deep trance state. I took her to the evening of the out-of-body visions, sometime during the last week of July 1978. Although she had not consciously remembered the date, under hypnosis she immediately supplied the exact date, July 26. She was describing getting ready for bed that night, when she became upset. She cried out as though frightened, and then began to sob openly. I gave calming suggestions so she could tell, 102, hidden information in dreams, me what was occurring. The sobbing stopped, and between sniffles she explained that she suddenly felt very heavy and the sensation was frightening. Everything was very dark and she couldn't see anything. Then something was telling her not to be afraid, and she was encompassed by a great feeling of love. Then the darkness changed to grey, and gradually scenes began to come into view. She appeared to be floating above the scenes, and it was an unusual feeling. She was aware that an entity was with her, but it appeared as just a grey, misty thing without form and substance. The only thing that was recognizable was large eyes, and even they seemed to float in and out of focus. The scenes that were shown of her future were identical to her memories of them. There were no new details added. The scene that disturbed her the most was the last one of the people dying in the large city. She cried and her voice quivered as she described the scene. It's sad. There are so many people dying. Some of them won't get well, no matter what I do. I'm giving them something. And I'm holding them in my arms, and I'm touching them. And some of them die anyway. It hurts me to see this. I can't help them all. I'm giving them something that this misty thing said to. It's some kind of food. I don't know how they got sick. But they're hanging off balconies. And their skin is a funny color. They're kind of grayish, yellow or blue. They're just sick looking. It's ugly, and all are bald, and skinny. She was crying, I'm not skinny. I can't get sick. He told me I couldn't get sick. I have to take care of these other people. Some of them are helped, and some are not. There are just so many of them. I don't think it was a war that made them sick. It was some kind of nuclear stuff. I don't know whether it was water, or what happened to them. It was like a cloud, but there was no war. It was like a storm. That's probably what killed the fish I saw, too. It had something to do with water, like rain. She was becoming so emotional that I thought it best to remove her from the scene of hopeless despair that she could do nothing about. I can't help them all, she insisted, but they cry, there are so many that are sick. I don't know who they, the custodians, 103, are. I don't recognize anybody. But I feel so sorry for them, and I love them. She protested, I don't know why it's me. Why do I do that? The misty thing is telling me I'm not supposed to be afraid of it. I was sent to Earth for this. I don't know why me. Oh, he has pretty eyes. I feel such love from him. Then it's like he touched me on my forehead, yet he didn't have any fingers. And all of a sudden I was back in my body. I got up and went out of that room. She stared out of the window at the dark night sky and nervously smoked a cigarette, trying to make some sense out of the experience. I know I wasn't dreaming. I've never dreamed sitting up before. I remember everything. He said I had to remember it. It's supposed to really happen, but I don't know where. Since she was so upset, I thought it best that we leave that scene and move on to the next experience. Obviously, we couldn't get any more information about it anyway. After calming her and giving relaxing suggestions, I moved her backward to September 1963 when she was a college student. She immediately returned to that time and described her dormitory room in detail and discussed her roommate, who was also her best friend. I then directed her to go to the night she had the strange dream about babies. She immediately began describing what she was seeing. "See, I'm in a room. And I'm like a candy stripper. D, a candy stripper? C, yeah. You know, those girls that work in hospitals. D, what makes you think you're like one of them? C, because I'm in a nursery. It has babies. I'm wearing an apron with pockets. That's why I look like a candy stripper. But I'm scared of the babies. D, why would you be afraid of a baby? C, because they're funny looking. They've got big eyes. And they're really smart. D, how do you know they're smart? C, because they talk to one another. D, with their mouths. 104, hidden information in dreams. C, no. They're in water. All up above their head. They're submersed in the water. It's like they're thinking at one another. But I can know what they're thinking. One of them knows I have the capsule. And it's gonna tell. D, what capsule are you talking about? C, the one that fell on the floor. It's just a plain old capsule. It's like a pill. And you can see through it. D, there's nothing inside it? C, well, there's something inside. But you can see through that too. I can't see what it is. D, you side none of them says they're going to tell? C, childish, he's going to tell on me. And he's mad at me. I can hear it in my head. Carrie described the containers that held the babies as something like vats with rounded edges. They were constructed of material that resembled clear plastic. She knew it was different from plastic, but not hard like glass. There were many of them in the room. She tried to count them, and thought there were at least 15, maybe as many as 17, of these containers. They were sitting on something because she could look into them without bending over. And they're all hooked together with a clear tube. That's what keeps the water filled. The tube goes to all of them, between each one and into one and then the other, like a hose. It comes out of the side of the wall, where there are knobs you turn and buttons you push. I don't know what they mean. I don't have anything to do with that part. This lady comes in and turns knobs and makes sure that the babies are okay. She likes the babies, and talks to them. My job is to watch the babies, take care of them. I have to check the water. There's a temperature or something on the side, which I have to check. The babies have big heads, and a little body. I don't like them. They're ugly. D, are they always in the water? C, I've never seen them out of the water. D, have you seen this before? The custodians, 105, C, sure. Lots of times. That's why I can work there. She described the lady as a normal-looking human, although stern and strict-looking. She's my boss, but I don't like her. She's mean. Except she's not the big boss. D, who is the big boss? C, the man in the other room. D, do you know what he looks like? C, I'm not sure. I don't go in there. D, is there any other furniture or anything in the room? C, I don't see any furniture. It's just the babies in these containers. I have to walk up and down between the babies. I have to check the temperature and the water, and make sure it's high enough. Some of the babies have their eyes closed, and some have them open. They all look alike. Ugly. Some of the containers are empty. That's where you put the pill. D, can you tell how that's done? C, she puts the pill in about an inch of water. Puts some water under it, through the pipe. And then she puts some other stuff in the water, but I don't know what it is. She brings that with her. It's in a little bottle. And she puts in a pinch of stuff, like when you cook you put a pinch of this and a pinch of that in it. And then she lays the capsule in it. Then it dissolves, and starts growing this baby. D, does it take a long time? C, no. I'm not sure how long. Because I'm not there all the time. But I know it doesn't take very long. D, do you think these are human babies? C, no, because they're ugly. They would be sick if they were human. D, what do you think they are? C, I don't know. D, well, have you ever been outside this room? C, yes. I don't know where we are, but it's big. D. Would it be like a hospital? 106. Hidden information in dreams. C. Pause, then carefully, I don't know. Sort of, I guess. It's like a military thing. D. Why do you feel it's military? C. You have to take orders. You just don't go anywhere you want to. D. How do you get there? C. You just wake up, and there you are. D. How long do you stay? C. Oh, overnight at least. D. Then what do you do when you leave there? C. You go to sleep. You wake up. And it's a dream. D. You say you've been doing this a lot? C. Oh, yeah. I think since I was 14 or 15. They don't let everybody take care of the babies. I don't know how I get here, but I have to work with the babies. D. You don't have any choice? C. No. You can't leave that room. D. Do you know what they do with the babies? C. They grow up to be people. And they're funny looking. D. Have you seen what the adults look like? C. They're tall, and really thin. They have long arms. I haven't seen them up close. D. What do their faces look like when they're grown up? C. Just like they did when they were babies. Ugly. They have big eyes. And a skinny jaw, hardly any. And their eyes. Their eyes are like oil. They change color. They're black and they're wet. D. What colors do they change to? C. Purple, blue, like oil. Apparently resembling an oil slick which has variations of color in it. D. What color is their skin when they're grown up? C. I think the grown-up babies are funny-looking, purpley, grayish, sick-looking. The babies are almost like you can. The custodians, 107, see through their skin. So transparent you can see their veins. And kind of like that for a big person too. D. Do they wear any clothes when they're grown up? C. I can't tell. He's skinny though. His arms are long. They come down long on his legs. When I saw him he was far away. He was standing at the top of the stairs looking down. D. Does this room have stairs? C. No. That was outside the room. You can't go outside the room. It was out the door where you're not supposed to go. I looked when the lady went out the door. D. It sounds like that part must be larger. C. It is. It's big. D. Then he was too far away to see his hands. Can you tell how many fingers they have by looking at the babies? C. The baby's fingers are really long. And they have a thumb, but it's up funny on their hand. It's up further by their wrist. D. How many fingers do they have? C. I don't. I hate to touch one. D. Have you had to touch them? C. Yeah. You have to straighten them out in the water. If they get turned bad, you just reach in and turn them over, so their heads lie back. So they don't turn over and get dangled. They lie on their arm or something the wrong way, because their bodies won't work. I have to put my hands in the water to turn them. And the water feels funny, almost like there's a lubricant in it. That's my job, but they don't like me, much. They just stare at you sometimes. D. Where did these babies come from? Do they have mothers, and fathers? This was a question Carrie had written down before we began the session. C. They come from a capsule. D. Where does the capsule come from? C. Somebody makes it. D. In another room or what? C. Must be. It's not in there. 108. Hidden information in dreams. D. How do you know they're in that capsule? C. Because they start to grow out of the capsule, with a little head and a little body. D. Well, do you know why they're growing these babies? C. I don't know. I just take care of the babies. They don't hurt anything. They just grow up to be people. Big, fun-looking people. D. Have you seen them when they are taken out of the water? C. No. I don't get to hold them then. D. So you don't know how you get to this place? You just wake up there? And then you go to sleep, and wake up in your own bed in the morning? Yes, and you never know when you're going to go again? C. No, you don't. It was increasingly apparent that I could not get any more information about this, because she did not leave that room. I ended the session and brought her to full consciousness. It had been obvious from her body and facial signs that she was in a very deep state. She did not move at all. Only her face showed expression. Even when she was crying, she made no other movements. When I began to count her out of trance, she became aware of her physical body again, and jerked and jumped noticeably. After awakening, she had no memory of the session at all. After she was fully awake, I had her obey a suggestion I had given her to draw a picture of the babies. Carrie was an accomplished professional artist, and had drawn pictures of them after the original dreams. She now made a rough sketch which I later compared to the copies she sent me. There were a few differences that she explained as she drew the sketch. When she drew the hand of the adult being, she drew three fingers, and said the hand was almost as long as the forearm. In her original drawing, she had four fingers. This time she said the three fingers felt right, and she was going to leave it like that. When she drew the picture of the incubators, she said, "This time I have the urge to add something here on the sides. It's as though something was, the custodians, 109, connecting them." I didn't put that in the original drawing. While she was drawing the vats and the connecting hoses, she suddenly cringed and exclaimed, "Oh, ooh. I just remembered. I put my hands in that water." We laughed. This was obviously a detail she did not remember from the original dream, and it revolted her. The last picture she drew was the being she had caught a glimpse of when the other woman opened the door. It was standing at the top of some stairs and had a light behind it, so she couldn't make out the features. But she knew this was one of the babies in adult form. When she was in college, she had painted a picture of this adult standing at the top of a spiral staircase looking down on a group of people. She didn't know where the idea came from. She called it Dante's Inferno, and she won an award for it. Although she had the painting for several years, she can't find it now. As she now sketched the drawing for me, she had the impression that it was not a staircase but some kind of light beam, maybe spiraling as in the picture she drew of the interior of the craft. She promised to send copies of the other drawings she had made from memory, although it now appeared we had more details than were in the originals. I left Connie's house at midnight with Carrie still asking questions about the session. I told her Connie would have to tell her about it. I had to get home since I had to drive to Little Rock the next morning for a convention. I knew I would not arrive home until 1 o'clock in the morning, but it was worth it to speak to this woman. In the years since this incident, I have found that some other investigators have obtained copies of the baby picture. Some of them are saying it is an example of human-alien hybrid experimentation, but that theory goes totally against what Carrie said under hypnosis. She insisted the babies were not human, but alien. The drawing she sent me of the interior of the craft indicates that she must have been outside the room at some time during this ongoing experience. I have been showing these pictures at my lectures for the past several years. I always described that drawing as the interior, 110, hidden information in dreams, of a huge mother ship with many levels. Now as I write this, I wonder if there could be another explanation. Could she have been in an underground experimental facility? The thought came to mind because of her mention of a military-type environment, and the fact that there was another seemingly human worker there. She never said where it was, only that she woke up there. She never could say how she was transported there. I have assumed it was a mother ship because, in my experience, that was the only thing conceivably large enough to house such a facility. Now I wonder. The vision Carrie reported of the disaster scene has been repeated through other subjects, not in exact detail, but describing similar scenarios that something drastic had happened to the Earth. I have even had similar cases in foreign countries, while doing UFO regressions, from people who have no knowledge of American trends in this field. My mail also attests to the fact that many people have had similar visions, through strikingly vivid dreams, out-of-the-body experiences, and simply flashes of insight. Where are these scenes and visions coming from? Are they real glimpses of the future? Or are they probabilities and possibilities on the timelines, as described by Nostradamus in my trilogy Conversations with Nostradamus? If they are possible futures, then they can be influenced and changed by the mind of man. Is this the reason for revealing them to us?